Hey guys, welcome back to the Apex Files podcast presented by Racecomp Engineering.
Cold.
Very cold, brisk morning. Yes, hell fucking yes. I'm Larry.
I'm Drew, and I don't usually wear this hat, but cold.
Today's occasion. Today's guest is OG in the Subaru world. He's been a pioneer for aftermarket parts since day one.
Yeah, when you go way back for like the US Subaru modification history, one of the names that pops up early on and is still big is Jeff Perrin.
Yep, Jeff Perrin, Perrin Performance, I don't know, so many parts to list off. Wheel spacers.
Is the first one. Yeah, I
don't know. It's one of the real popular ones, you know. Yeah, obviously you got exhaust and
there's a lot. We're excited to hear about what he's learned over the years and he can tell us what's to come too.
Expand on his world of Subaru throughout the decades. Yeah. So hope you guys like today's show. If you like what you see, please like, subscribe, and share.
Thanks.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Apex Files podcast. I'm Larry.
And I'm Drew.
And today's guest, we have Mr. Jeff Perrin. Welcome. Hello. We're honored to be your first podcast.
Yeah, so you're in Portland, Oregon. Is that right?
Yep, Portland, Oregon. Technically, we're in Hillsboro.
Okay.
That's where our main shop is. But Portland's kind of that outlying city that everybody knows. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so we're talking to each other. The Perrin, you guys go way back to like the 2.5 RS days before the WRX even came here. Yeah. How did you get into Subarus? Like why Subarus? Yeah.
Was it always Subarus, or like what was the start to your love for cars?
I think the start was in high school. You know, you kind of have like a dream of something and. Back then it was bikes. I was into bikes and mountain road bikes. That was my life. I worked at bike stores for a long time. And nice. When you get old enough where you can have a car and drive, that drive and love to modify things and tinker with things moved to the car. And you know, back then it was there was a couple of rally video games that got me really interested in WRX. Like a lot of people, they had, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a PlayStation game. I played it a lot. There was a car that we never had, which was the WRX. And it was just sort of a pipe dream at the time. And, I had Civics, Integras, a couple other fun cars. I had a Mazda 323 GTX.
Oh, nice.
And which I still do. We can come back to that. and then when the WRX first came to the US, it was like, you know, well, I got to have one. But I wasn't really into the 2.5 RS because. Back then, there weren't any. They weren't on the road. The shops didn't support them, you know, those kind of things. So, when the WRX came out, was really when things started. You know, my job at the time, I worked for a rapid prototyping company. And we did 3D printing of things before it was something. It was someone's desktop. I mean, like, I have one right there, you know, and it's a little thing out. But back then, it was like, you know, $1 million machine. Anyways, my job moved. I didn't want to move with it. And that's when I started making parts for those cars. So that was in 2001, because, you know, that car came out in 2000.
Yeah.
As a 2002, which is really weird back then. Towards the end of 2001, end of 2000. That's when it started, was right around 2000. End of 2001 or so, but we didn't really do much for the 2.5 RS. Just because that's not where we started, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard to work backwards. Every time we've even tried to take on a new car, working backwards to support things is really difficult.
It sucks when people ask us for like older shocks for, you know, like, you know, like 90s Forcers
or 2005 Baja, which we'd love to do. But that, you'd be surprised how much that question comes up. But yeah, you're right. And I'd love to talk about that more later and maybe with your Mazda 323 GTX. Yeah. there's a lot there, like the Portland bike to Subaru pipeline and also the PlayStation game to Subaru pipeline is like definitely real.
You were obviously on top of that. So, you know, with the WRX coming out, what was what was your first mod with it? You know, that car obviously is what sparks Parent Performance today, right?
The first thing was the uppipe, and that came from a friend of mine bought one, and we had a local car club that was, I don't know, 20 people strong, and every weekend we were installing parts and doing things. And a friend of mine had bought an uppipe, and he brought it, and we were looking at it, and I'm like, well, you know, I could make that. And that's what started all. So the first part was an uppipe, and you know, that part today is still made, but there's so many of them out there. It's not really our most popular thing, but it was our most popular part for quite a few years. That was the mod.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
It's interesting, you know, I find it interesting that you say uppipe, because I find most people nowadays, or even back then, like, you know, it would be a catback would be the first thing, right? Or like intake would be the first thing they kind of go for, like the more simple stuff. And I feel like uppipe or downpipe will kind of be like, you know, third or fourth on the list for most people back then.
It was, but at the time there were a lot of people that made catbacks. And when you're small, it's hard to make a cat. Like a catback is a pretty overwhelming thing to handle for packaging reasons even. And, you know, there's a time when it was just me by myself before there was more people. And so that those kind of things make it really difficult. Even things like an intake, you know, that involves people that are outside of a simple machine shop or sheet. It involves a lot of other outside contractors to put that together. So it wasn't the first thing to do. And back then, there were all these companies from Australia that had already, and Japan, that had already been making parts for these cars. So they already had some of those parts available, and just didn't seem like the first thing I could compete with.
At that time too, like, you know, the 2.5 RS. So going way back, you know, Subaru made and from I guess 98 to 2001, there was the Impreza 2.5 RS, and it looked cool, but it was slow, you know, non-turbo. And then Subaru comes out with the WRX in the United States, and it has power, and not only does it have power, but it's easy to make a bunch more power. So there really was like this huge aftermarket explosion here in the US, and a lot of it was, you know, importing Australian parts and Japanese parts. But you, as like, you know, you were a different approach is making your own stuff here in the United States. And so I remember I was young at the time, so I was probably too young to drive then. I don't remember if I have a driver's license, but I was on NASIOC. My older brother had a WRX, and just kind of like seeing the you know, comparisons between, like, people kind of wanted like the JDM stuff. What was that like for you, kind of like trying to break into that market as like one of the first American companies to really like focus on these cars?
Well, NASIOC was a huge part of it. And, you know, when you can interact directly with people and people are asking questions, you can talk to them, it gets them interested in your part. So even though there was the importing of the parts, the Japanese parts, all those, we weren't competing exactly with them. It was more of a one-on-one basis. You know, early on, it was really just those people in NASIOC we sold to.
Real quick, to all these new owners out there that probably don't know what NASIOC is, because they just, you know, mostly now it's like Facebook groups and stuff. Just real quick, explain to them what NASIOC was.
NASIOC, yeah.
Still is.
That's still.
Okay, well, let's rewind. iClub. That was what it was. iClub first. But it was this kind of original bulletin board forum for Subarus. And, you know, it went from iClub to NASIOC, which is the North American Impreza Subaru Owners Club. Sorry, I didn't think about that. But that's where it came from. And that was like where everybody went, because that was the era when the internet was kind of starting to get stronger. And it was the central place for that. You know, now it's totally different. But yeah, NASIOC was where everything happened. And you could have a part, take a picture, show somebody, and it could spread to, you know, 20,000 customers instantaneously. And anyway, it worked out really well for us for a long time.
Right. Cause it seemed like a lot of, you know, it was a great way for customers to connect customers and vendors together. Right. And
oh, yeah,
people to share reviews and, and their feedback, and you know, just to you know, grow the market even more. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know NASDAQ's still around, but it's that's not the go-to thing. But I kind of have this feeling it'll surge. It'll go back to that. I feel like people are going to get tired of the other outlets, and it'd be kind of fun if people circled back to NASDAQ again.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so sorry. So yeah, beyond NASDAQ, yeah, and that was the way you got, you know, you got the up piping out there, right?
Yeah, and it literally, I still have the notebook that I wrote down all the orders on for the first time.
Nice. You know,
it was like 50, 40 people or something like that. And, yeah, so that's where it started, as an up pipe. And then from there it was, I really had a lot of interest in machining things because of, in the bike world, everything cool is machined. And so that kept me interested in that. So that was the next kind of part was machined parts. So things people didn't have at the time were some fuel rails. That was one of them. That was part number 2 or 3. And then just kind of blew up from there.
That's really cool. Yeah. NASDAQ was a big part of the race comp story too. And you know, I think with like the, you know, some of the fascination, I think with Japanese parts, is, you know, they make some cool stuff and they have had the car for longer than us. And at that time, you know, they had a 10-year head start almost. But it was difficult to pick up the phone and call someone in Japan at the time to talk like what parts you need. But you could do that with Perrin and all the other companies, and some of which are still around, to like talk about your build or your suspension or just, you know, what works and what doesn't. So, and that was a key part of NASDAQ too, was interaction. And it's still there a little bit, but it's different. What do you see like is kind of like the current challenges, I guess, with being an aftermarket company in this current stage of the world?
You know, standing out is always a hard one. I feel we do a pretty good job of coming up with new things that within a short period of time get duplicated by people. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard thing too. You know, I'm not going to name any names, but there's a very well-known company that just is exact copy everything. And that is the hard thing right now. They are exact copying so many things. And it's not just us, it's from a lot of people. That is the hardest thing, really. You know, right now I'm glad Subaru came out with a new car because that made a big difference in our world. You know, the car enthusiast was, I think, kind of stale. So right now customers are coming to us, which is great. And so that's not really a hard thing to deal with right at the moment, is trying to gather customers, but it's keeping them a customer forever without having to fight the people that are selling the same kind of thing you have for half the price.
Right, and you expanded your market a little bit as well. So GTRs and it's some back to some Honda Civic parts, right?
Yeah, that was really, really small. You know, we got into it kind of late. And so we expanded, but it was, we are not big enough to be able to take on a whole car like that and have every single part that we do for the WRXs and apply it to those cars. It's really difficult. And the Honda market's huge, but we're coming into it, kind of at the tail end of those, other guys have been around forever doing Honda stuff. So it was hard. So we do have some stuff. It sells okay, but you know, really, our focus is Subaru. Every time we try to expand to a new car, it's hard to put that same kind of focus into it. You know, we'd love to get a GR Corolla and do that, which is such a cool car.
They're awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard to think that we can apply all of the same stuff that we do to those cars. But you never know. So yeah, our market really is Subaru, and you know, we have a handful of GTR things, but it really is just a couple simple parts.
Yeah. So do you have a project car right now for a shop car? I mean,
Yeah. So we always have lots of shop cars. Mm-hmm. we have an 04 STI. We have, a 15 or I should say a FAWX.
Okay.
Yeah. We have an RA in our boat. We also have a S209, and we have a 15WX. So those cars, or sorry, 22WX. Yeah. And they're all kind of in different states. You know, two of those cars I mentioned are tucked away. They have some parts installed in them, but they're basically just kept for, you know, for the future. You know, yeah. They're special cars, low mile cars. Mm-hmm. I think the S209 probably has 300 miles on it or something silly. But we have an 04 STI that has, I think it's got 12,000 miles or 22. I can't remember it. Wow. It's really low, and it's obsidian black, which is awesome that, color.
That's the best color. Yeah, it is the best color.
It's that one you want to take care of, but it looks awesome. Those don't get driven. We use them sometimes for things, but really rare. Mm-hmm. But the RA and the 22WX, which are in my office right behind the camera here, they're always taken apart. I mean, bumpers are off. Mm-hmm. You name it, they're taken apart all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this new WRX? Because, you know, it seems like people either love it or hate it. But the people that don't like it are seem to warm one up to it, you know. And, you know, we know, like, the performance side of things. It seems like a great motor once you start really getting on it.
Oh, yeah. So what do I think about it? When they launched it, I liked the look of the black cladding. I'm probably one of the few people, but it's kind of a trend that's been growing a lot of cars. And some cars it looks good on, some cars it doesn't. And I just liked it because it was different. Mm-hmm. But also at the time, I was really tired of the old 15 to 21 WRX and STI because it just had been around for so long. And I had probably five or six of them in that length of time, maybe. And so I was just looking for something different. And I mean, you know, I think the only thing that Subaru could have done is not killed the STI for the new car. But I think the surge of people we are seeing right now is because they killed that car, and the people that were going to buy those STIs, you know, that the new version 22+WRX STI version, but they're coming back around and going, okay, this thing can be as good as an STI. And now they have the new TR that came out that is getting closer to it. Except for the transmission, but on that, I love the car. I would 100% say that it is the best WRX Subaru's ever made. 100%. There's no one can argue that it is the best WRX. Is it the best WRX and STI if you combine the two? That's hard to say, just because, you know, that transmission, the old car, the brakes, those things really do make that car feel a lot more solid, you know, but. It's not that you can't do it to the new car,
but it's different than when, like, it comes from factory like that, right? Like, versus like building it out and, you know, having a factory built car that has just everything that they have just needs to be put together.
Yeah, totally. And I'd rather do that too, because, you know, it's easier just to buy a car for most people and finance the car with the parts instead of spending an extra $5,000 out of pocket to do the brakes or you know, or more for the transmission. But it's an awesome car. You know, the handling of it's better than it's ever been. The power plant is proving to be very bulletproof, more than it's ever been. Now, people do stupid things to them, and they're not just exploding. Mm-hmm. You know, time will tell too. The transmissions, people have freaked out about them, but they still seem to hold up really well.
Have you driven the CVT versions yet?
No, but it's funny you mentioned that. I reached out to our local guy because I really want to drive one. Yeah. I've seen some videos, you know, Jason, the engineer explained guy, I watched that video of him. And I was like, that thing shifts amazing. And so could that transmission hold turbo kit kind of torque?
Right.
And if it could, it might actually be pretty good. I had a 8 or 17 WRX CVT, and I beat the crap out of it and did stupid things with it. And I did get the belts to slip or chain, whatever you want to call it, slip. So I know that there's definitely a weak link to them, but I don't know. Time will tell on those. I'm interested, but no one's going to be taking out a manual to put in a CVT.
Yeah, right.
I think we're a little curious about it too. Absolutely. It probably wouldn't be what we'd buy, but I can respect it. And I think that video that you mentioned, I remember that. It could be cool. And I hope I hope it is cool. Because I think people do buy it. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, we are getting a lot of CVT customers. So we have a couple CVT specific parts, and I would say it's, I don't know the numbers, but it's got to be twice as many that Subaru's selling compared to the old car.
Wow.
I mean, we used to have some CVT parts for the old car, mm-hmm. and they didn't sell that great. But this car, I mean, there's a few things that we just can't keep enough of. So, yeah.
What would those like go with, like accessories, like catbacks, or what is like the trend, mod trend right now for most buyers?
Mod trend is, at least what we are seeing, is noise related. So intake and exhaust.
Okay.
You know, people are a little freaked out about emissions things, and mm-hmm. you know, the access port is, access port is a no-brainer, right? Like that's
number trend, one, right?
But we don't see that because, you know, we don't make them, but we do sell a lot of them, but people are a little freaked out by emissions related things. So the J-pipe / you know, for old people, or older cars, the downpipes, that primary catalyst is, that's a sensitive thing right now for people, for people that make them and for customers, because they get check engine lights with them. So that is not a trend we see, but intake, noise related, you know, some of those basic engine mods that we're accustomed to, which are intercoolers, mm-hmm. Boost tubes, you know, charge pipes, things like that. Those are really, really popular for the new car. And they all make really good power, you know. Yeah. All those parts bolt on and just make a noticeable butt difference, which is important. Now, you could, on some car, you might say, oh, it makes 5 horsepower, but you can't feel it, who cares? But on the new cars, it's like, you know, our intake that, you know, we say is safe to install any stage of car, it's 15 to 20 horsepower, and you notice it, and the cool sounds. I mean, it is probably the most popular part we have right now. We can't make enough of them, so. Nice. And sorry to customers that are waiting on. You know, we're behind.
Yeah, it's getting worth the wait, obviously. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, think so.
And you sort of mentioned this before, but like when Subaru comes out with a new car, and especially when it's like a fairly substantial revamp of the platform, it's awesome for us and the people that make parts for the car, but it's also like, okay, we have a lot of work to do. Like it's a commitment. So, you know, you're saying it's hard to do that for like other cars too, in addition to, Subarus. But like, yeah, I mean, like when you get a new car, like the new WRX, or for us, like the new BRZ, which wasn't quite as different, but, like what's the first thing you do after a test drive? Like, throw it up on the lift and just start taking parts off, or
so almost every time new cars come out, we'll have two of them. I always buy one for myself, and then we have one for the shop. And so it literally is put on the hoist, take some stuff off, what fits, what doesn't fit, those kind of things. You know, when the BRZ is a popular car for us too, that car we knew that it was going to be the same.
Yeah.
So when it got here, it was just like, okay, great. It's all the same except for an intake. I mean, there are some other things that were a little different, but it wasn't like as exciting, but this car was like, you know, everything was different. I had actually bought a Outback XT prior to the WRX coming out, mm-hmm. in lieu of kind of just, okay, here's this new power plant. It's rumored to be in the WRX. And mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I was able to try a few things out on that, but you know, there wasn't tuning for it. And, but it helped a little bit because you could kind of see some of the architecture. So when the car got here, you know, we made a handful of things pretty fast, you know, probably faster than we ever have. And it just depends on what people are wanting initially, because people, of course, when the new car comes out, they're skeptical. Oh, does this thing really make power? Is an intake really safe? Intake is a big one for these cars, right? You know, there's been so many bad intakes made for them that mm-hmm. they have a bad rap. And that was one of the most important ones, is to make an intake that was really good for the car. And I messed around with a lot of versions to get it to where it is and make it safe, but make power. And that was probably the first thing we did. And then, you know, we had a top my intercooler that we had finished designing before the car was even here. And as soon as we could fit that to the car, we put that into play right away. So we had to top my intercooler really fast too. But those parts are both still really popular for us.
Are bypass valves still pretty hot in the market?
Well, the new one's electronic. And it's the idea is really cool. And it's funny you brought that because we just did a little video on our, we have one that we make that's a mechanical version. And the benefit to going mechanical is that it's smoother. It releases more natural. So like everyone's used to when you back up the throttle, you know, the boost starts to release. And on the new car, it's you start to back the throttle and it's instantaneously released. There's not like this smooth transition. And so for race car guys, I think they really will like the mechanical one better than the electronic one. The bypass valve itself on the factory factory plastic part, it leaks. So that was the first reason that we built that, is because the factory part leaks. Now, it's not tons, but it's enough that it's like, okay, well, my turbos having to work a little harder to make up its leak. Let's get rid of it. Right. And we knew that it had a potential leak because they use the same part as Volkswagen Mini, BMW. It's this plastic thing. And they just, they always have had this problem. We don't make one that vents to atmosphere. So it's popular because of the functionality of it, not because of the noise. And that's, so is it going to be a popular mod? We think it'll be pretty popular, but not for the noise reasons, like some parts were in the past.
Because that was like, that was the common thing, right? People got it for the noise. And then, the educated versus, or new people, they'd be like, it for these cars, it should be recirculating, not blowing out like that.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
But some people didn't care and wanted that noise anyway.
Well, we just don't buy an intake, because if you have an intake on the car, you can totally hear it going off, factory or ours. And so, even though, yes, that adds more money to someone's build, but it's a better way to have better drivability in the car and not have to deal with the stumbles and weird idle things that can come about from those vent atmosphere styles.
There's a lot of parallels with like the function or form suspension crowd and the noise or reliability and proper function motor crowd too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure you guys deal with it where it's just like, somebody just wants coilovers that just lower their car, not knowing that they're the same valving for some other car and they're super stiff or tear, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's fun.
but at various times we've seen like customers the typical Subaru customer has changed a little bit. There's kind of been a common theme for a while too, but with Instagram and Facebook and stuff, like we've seen kind of a change over time. Different platforms kind of had like more track people, and others have had more like show car people. I'm curious your thoughts on like that for the 22 WRX. Like, do you have a feeling for the market? I know that you said there's a lot of like people interested in noise and stuff like that, but do you think a lot of people are going to be tracking these cars?
What I always see is that when the new cars come out, more people are tracking them and doing more performance oriented things. And as they get older, they tend to do more dress up and different kinds of things. So right now I do see a lot of people. I see a lot of the BRZs being tracked currently. That is like, I mean, they're everywhere. And maybe that's because of the hype, or maybe not hype, the issues surrounding the oil issue. I'm just seeing more on YouTube because that's what I searched for, maybe. But I see a lot more of those being tracked than the new WRXs. But I think that changes too. This last summer, I noticed a lot of people. I saw a lot of drag racing going on, which I hadn't really seen in a while. But it's hard to say. I don't ever have time to make it to a track anymore, to a track day. I used to do that maybe every other month or so back in the day, but it's just, so it's hard to know what locally is being raced around the track. I'd love to think people are doing that more with the WRX now.
I hope so. Yeah. It's a great platform, and like it handles, it's a great platform to build on, to build a track car, I think. right, let's pretend you are the in charge of designing the what would have been the 22 WX STI. What would you have done?
You know, the brakes are the biggest one, I think, and the transmission. You know, those two things make the car. And I'm a fan of the wing on the car. So my car, I have an RA wing on the back of it, and it has to have the wing. So all Subaru needed to do is just take their transmission have somewhere.
You put the RA wing on the new VB WRX.
Yes. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Interesting. What are these? What does this look like? I haven't seen anything online.
Oh, it looks awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Oh, you piqued Larry's interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've always thought there's a WRX, a new WRX around me by my job, and he has the older VA style wing, and the proportions don't seem right. It doesn't fit that well, in my opinion.
It's not bad, but I can see, you know, the RA wing would look awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just like, huh. Okay.
Yeah, it makes the car look a lot better. I've had a lot of people comment on it, and my car is lowered with that, and it looks really good. I think it goes well with the black cladding because that wing is black, the stanchions on are black, all that stuff's black, and it looks really good in my car. But if Subaru had done that, I think power wise they probably could have got away with leaving the stock turbo and just had a different tune for it, because you know we're making so much more on these things just with the tune that they probably didn't need to swap the turbo. Yeah. So, and then they just need the wheels from the RA. You know, the new TR wheels.
Oh my God, they're
not good.
They're trash. They're so bad.
They're so busy.
Yeah. Why can't Subaru make
pieces and things
good wheels anymore? I mean, like 04 STI. I guess there are some in like the GR that were decent, but yeah, it's been a while since there was like a good Subaru wheel design. Yeah.
The RA wheels, S209 wheels, those are beautiful wheels.
Yes.
I've been looking for some for my car for quite a while, but they're really hard to find that aren't $3,000 a wheel or something. They're a ridiculous price. There's a few, actually, there's some cool wheels from overseas that you can get to that, but yeah, they don't put. Yeah, I don't know who comes up with some of these things, because the TR is a premium price.
Yeah,
I want premium looking wheels. And
absolutely,
don't quite fit it.
No, they look like they belong on a Forester or something, right? Like that's.
Oh yeah.
But you know, it's funny because we were talking before this, like about the new STI S4 Sport, whatever they call it now
in Japan.
I don't know if you've seen this. Where you have to win a lottery apparently to get chosen. There's to 500. Buy 500 units.
It's a whole lot of drama for. Yeah,
it's the new CVT or STI Trans, whatever they want to call it. And then they have, you know, it's funny we were talking about the wheels too, because the wheels they're not fun. You know, they're very a basic classy wheel, but it's like. Something that much, you expect a little more. But it seems like car, they're kind of going for another target market there, like a little older crowd.
The STI S4 in Japan has kind of been that like refined older crowd. I think the CVT was not a surprise for me for that S4, but yeah.
Yeah, they've had the S4 for a while and they all had that CVT, but they also had that kind of upscaled interior in them. And those kind of things, which I thought would be really cool here. Speaking of things like that, you know, one of the things that I think would be great on the new car is if they had done the digital dash.
Mm-hmm.
The Vorg, you know, gets that. And I think if they did an STI, they should do the digital dash and kind of bring the interior up to spec compared to some of the other cars out there.
Speaking of the Vorg, what a market they missed here.
Well, maybe I would have bought one. Yes,
I absolutely and you would have bought one. So that's two. You know, yeah, that's 100%. I know a lot of people would have bought one too. You know, they look great, and there's, you know, we still love wagons. You know, there are people out there that still love wagons, and we're one of them.
And I agree with you on the digital dash. I'm a little bit old school in like how I like my cars, but I like digital dashes. That's the one thing that I'm all in for. So I think that'd have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that they didn't do that for the WRX to start, but especially because like the new BRZ does have a digital dash, and hopefully someone will retrofit those to first gen so I can do that for my car. But yeah, we'll see.
What do you like? How is parent performance preparing for the future? Like in terms of like all these new cars and, you know, hybrids or EVs that they're trying to push out. And we know Subaru's going to go that route. But are you guys doing anything to prep for that?
Yes. I think what's really going to happen is there isn't going to be this hard year of, okay, everything from here on out is EV only. I think there's going to be a blend of hybrids leading up to that and beyond a little bit. I think it's unrealistic for a lot of car manufacturers to switch over to EV, especially Subaru. You know, they only have the one, mm-hmm. and it's really not even their car. I mean, it's the Toyota BZ4X, which is not a great car, as I'm sure you guys have seen. It's just, mm-hmm. it has terrible reviews. So Subaru, with having 95% of their fleet in gas, they're not going to make that instant switch to electric. I think they're going to do hybrid. And I have hopes that they do it with the WRX, because a hybrid WRX really could be awesome. Imagine having, I don't know, 50 or 80 foot-pounds of torque instantly in the car. It would make that car awesome. Yeah. So I actually am looking forward to that when they do that. And let's just say that, you know, in 15 or 20 years or 15 years or something, that they're all EVs. The last gas car sold is still going to be on the road for 20 something years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we still sell a lot of things to the 08 to 14 WRX STI crowd. And that's how we're looking at the future, is that there's still going to be a lot of customers out there for a long time. At least that's our opinion. And it may become more nostalgic to have a gas powered car at some point, but that's a long ways down the road.
We agree. I think, you know, as the market still pushes, there's still people, and I think even nowadays with, you know, motorsports as being as big as it is, and, you know, all these Netflix and documentaries and stuff pushing, you know, kids and people to want to like be more into sports cars and drive, and, you know, they can go go-karting or do a sim race or something like that, or now go out to a local autocross, you know, pay $50 for a weekend and experience the car. Right. And like that only just trickles down more and more for the older generation, you know, cars, models, you know, 08 to 14, and even the GD still, right? They're still a pretty hot car.
When you look at like, well, it's sad sometimes, but like the used car prices for the handful of reasonably good condition bug eyes that are still out there, you know, those cars are, they're still popular. There's, unfortunately, they're all rusty, but they're still popular. And of course, people will need parts for them because, I mean, there's some Subaru parts that, bodies, mostly bodies. But like, you can't buy, I think it's the front control arms for bug eye WRXs. Like, Subaru doesn't make them anymore. So like, there's going to be parts that you can't get anymore. Like for me, I think about like the future of the aftermarket in general. And I think that might be a big part of it, is, you know, some of those older cars, people are going to be holding on to them and maintaining them, and, you know, wanting to do a few things here and there, and the aftermarket is going to be the solution. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the bug eyes, we've always had dreams of trying to find a good one. And, you know, in Oregon, we don't have salt on the road. So they tend to last, and they're okay, but they're really hard to find that aren't modified or aren't just gross, you know? They're so rare nowadays.
I'd probably buy one now if anybody has a white or blue bug eye sedan, send me a message that's like not beat or rusty. Yeah, let me know.
good luck with that.
have you guys seen an uptick in JDM cars for like business?
Not yet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like all these imported, like GC.
I'm excited for those. I think there's so many cool cars. Right now, I think they're just too expensive. So there's a few places within, I don't know, 100 miles of here that sell them, and they tend to sit on them a while because they're still asking like $20,000 for some of those cars. I think they're just too much. But at some point, the 04 to 07s are available, and some of those cool STI models we never got, I think we'll start to see an uptick in that.
Yeah.
So hope anybody, so. I think they're really cool.
Yeah. Right. So if anybody has like an S202, let me know. But going back to the VBWRX, I think if there is a hybrid STI or STE or whatever, if there's a next generation WRX and it's got individual motors on each wheel, so like kind of doing like an active diff thing and a power plant that's got reasonable power, we've kind of gone back and forth. Yeah. I think it'd be awesome. I think no matter what, people are going to be upset. Just that happens with regular every generation anyway, so might as well make something cool. But with the VBWRX, like with the stock motor, I'm not a huge motor guy, but like with the stock turbo, like what are like the limitations of the car with the stock turbo?
Well, that comes down to fuel. For pump gas, that turbo for us on our dyno, this is with every bolt on you can think of, tuned to the maximum pump gas. If there's a limit of, oh, I don't know, let's say 340-ish. Okay. We don't have the greatest fuel in Oregon. We have 92 octane here, 340 to 360 is kind of in that range. But to go beyond that is, if you have ethanol, I mean, there's guys that were pushing the stock turbos to 450. Jesus. And so is there a limit that, there's a limit, but it really comes down to fuel. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where, I can't remember what you asked originally, but the stock power plant and the stock turbo, they kind of, it's that 340 range. Mm. But if you go back to the previous generation, that was like 300.
That was my next question. Yeah. Like it's a big step. Yeah.
Cause I think with this new motor, I feel like it kind of went back to when the Evo X first came out. Like when the Evo 10 first came out, people were making crazy power on that motor with simple bolt-ons, right? You know, almost touching, 400 wheels. It was just simple bolt-ons. And then E85 would be over that. And I feel like this new WRX kind of gives people that same feeling and the ability to do a lot of that way.
Yeah, totally. It has the Evo vibe of where it's tuned to 240-ish or whatever stock, or sorry, 220-ish stock. But there's 150 horsepower on tap at any point, which is really cool. I think is why the new car does so well.
Yeah.
The old WRX, to hit 300 took a lot, and you were pushing it. The new car, it's easy. I mean, it really is easy to do.
I mean, like even like so I have a VASTI, and I mean, I got it summer 14, loved it, still love it ever since, but. Making on power on that car sucks. You know, you have to do so much more and so much, fuel rails, pump, injectors, all the supporting mods for a stage 2 bolt on to make it reliable and even, get power out of it versus this new chassis. It's so easy.
And on those cars, if you push it, you get 320 and you're pushing it. And which I, it's nice to just have easy power. Mm-hmm. We have a turbo kit that we've been working on for a while, and I've been using it, and it's easy to make 400 horsepower on it, like without trouble. It's just and that's really nice to have something like that versus before where you're just running crazy boost and whatever to hit something like 400 horsepower on pump gas. I'm talking pump gas. Ethanol throws things out the door, and it's kind of a bummer. We have ethanol around here, but it's really only two places, and from where we are, it's a 20-minute drive.
Wow. And
especially on ethanol, then you're really using it for. But it's kind of a pain to do. So we don't get into that much. So we don't, to all of our tunes we do, which are just for our own cars and whatnot, but it's always on pump gas or water meth injection. That's a popular thing that we do.
But at least you guys get 92 ethanol up there, right? It's better than 91.
Yeah, the 91 in California is not great. Where you guys are at, you get 93 octane.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But then again, your trade-off is you have salt on the roads that destroys the car.
Oh my God. This past couple of days, it's
can we host my car down after this?
If the water is frozen. Oh, it's probably frozen. Yeah, yeah. But real quick before I let you go, one thing we want to touch on. What are your thoughts on the 6,000 RPM red line in this car? Because... you know, people see it again, it's a love or hate type of thing, but then when you drive it, it seems to kind of fade away a little bit.
It does, because most people, when you're driving the car, don't rev beyond that, so you don't really miss it. So most people, a normal enthusiast is driving down the road, they don't even go above 5 grand most of the time, you know. But it is annoying at times. I wish the gearing was different, I wish the gearing was a little longer. And then it would feel like if second gear went to 60 and first gear is a little longer, the red line wouldn't bother me. But also 7,000 RPM red line with especially the stock turbo, it's totally fine. People, we've been doing that forever. And so with the tune, it kind of goes out the door. There's some people have some valve float problems with 7,000 or higher with bigger turbos with a lot of boost, but the stock turbo at Redline, it's pretty safe to run that. So, the Redline bothered me when I got in the car the first time. And I was kind of, it was a bummer, really, because I bought the car sight unseen. Of course, I'm not going to just go buy one. I don't care how it drives, So I just go, I get in the car, and I look at the Redline, I'm like, that can't be right. And, I didn't really break in my car. I just beat on it to start with. And sure enough, it was just over 6 grand. And it's silly, but whatever.
I had a little bit of a problem with it when we got a car. But I drive a first gen BRZ. And so that has a 7,400 RPM red line. And also that WRX is the first time I've driven a car with actual power in a while. So I'm like, yeah, let's go. And then red line. Oh, okay. But yeah.
So. Yeah, your old gen BRZ is not, it's definitely underpowered compared to the new cars.
He keeps on going between swapping the new motor. I'm like, we'll just get you a new car. It's fine.
We'll see. Someone else will have to do it for me.
I really like the new car a lot. The new BRZ is so much better than the old car as far as power goes. Now, is it slow? It's still slow, but it doesn't feel like, I have to go buy a supercharger for it. But the old car, it was just such a pig.
The old car was like a good base. The new car is a great start.
Yeah, the first gen motor, it doesn't have any like character. Like I used to have a Mini Cooper S 2005, which had some of your parts on it, which is cool. Yeah, and that didn't have power either, but the motor felt fun and good and had character and it was cool. But BRZ has a tiny bit more power, just feels sad.
It does, yeah.
I do love the car though. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about your Mazda. Tell us about your 323. That was a car when I was like in high school that like stupid me was like that was a goal, but kind of weird.
That's like one of I think the great Mazda products because people just
original
people just go straight to the FDRX7 or FCRX7 and stuff and forget about everything else, but like that the Cosmo, like I love those things.
Yeah, those are cool. I've had two of them. I have one now, but back in the day, I can't remember when it was, but I would drive by this one every day. It was sitting at someone's house. I talked to the guy and basically it was blown up. They thought there was some problem with it. They put a bunch of oil in the cylinder head to check for compression. And of course there's blue smoke. Well, I bought it and I just drove it and I just burned out all the oil they poured in the cylinder. It was perfectly fine. Anyways, that was my first one. And it was really cool. It drove so much different than the other cars I had back then, which were Civics. I always had Civics or an Integra or something back then. And it actually had power and, it's a turbo. You can turn up the boost on it and do some things. And eventually I sold it. And then I came across another one that was someone else's project that they just didn't quite finish and also was not running. And so that's the car that I currently have. I bought it, tried to figure it out. I bought a standalone for it. I did a whole bunch of stuff and it wouldn't run. And then one day I figured out that the guy put a cat in it that the cat's come packed with styrofoam, and the styrofoam block that it was packed in was inside the cat.
Oh.
So it wasn't running because the exhaust was 100% blocked off. So this day I cut the cat kind of thing. It instantly started up and I was like, okay, good now. So that's my current project car that it's got the digital dash in it, the old
that's awesome.
If you look them up, you'll see they're just a funky little old car. But
there's
not that many left.
Right. And I think they're all in the Pacific Northwest too.
They're all in the Pacific Northwest. Oh yeah. There's a few guys around that rallied them, and there's one guy that has like 10 of them that are all parts cars.
That's awesome.
I don't drive it much. It really is a summer only thing. And I drive the WX every day and beat the crap out of that. The other car I've had, and it just sits in the garage.
Yeah. It's basically it's got like the 1.6 original Miata motor, but turbocharged, and it's all wheel drive, and it's a little hatchback.
Yeah. Mine actually has a 1.8 liter swap and a different transmission, and it's even fat. Yeah. It's got a GT25 or GT28 turbo on it.
It goes good.
But what
does it weigh?
It handles so bad, though. I think it's 2,700 pounds.
Okay.
I think it's 20. Yeah, with all the stuff out of it, I think it's 2,700 pounds. So it's pretty fast for what it is. But the steering is so slow compared to the new cars. You know, it doesn't handle that great. But whatever, it's old. Yeah, if you jack up the car on one side, you know, the doors don't close well on the other. You know, it's like that. A really flexible car.
Yeah, a topic for another time, but I'm curious if you've 3D printed parts for that car that like otherwise would have been kind of impossible to make.
Not yet, no. Okay. The few things that I've wanted to 3D print are like funny interior parts that aren't visible to, it's, you know, because they're old plastic, old and brittle, you know, so then you're fighting, don't tighten the screw too tight or something's going to crack it. So it's some of the bosses that hold some of those things,
I'll send you
some pictures of it. It's kind of cool.
Definitely. I think that's like going to be a surprisingly big market in the future. I had an old Datsun Roadster and there are so many parts of that. And I was like, if I just had a big enough 3D printer, I could just reprint half of this car and I'd be in much better shape. But
Yeah, your restoration of things like that with 3D printers, it definitely will be a thing.
Have you seen or have you dabbled in any of that with like just testing stuff? Because I know like it can be used, you know, pretty good and just like to not spend thousands of dollars on one product, and you can just kind of make a scaled version of the actual thing, you know, maybe in metal or plastic or whatever.
I experimented with the printer to a point. There's a limit to what what ours can do. For production, we never use it for that. It never could be. It's slow. But a lot of times, if I want to make something, I just go, if it's something that it's going to be machinable, I'll just go machine it. I can make it something metal faster sometimes than 3D printing it. It depends on what it is, but yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Well, I think that's it for us.
Thank you so much. We are honored to have you as our, you know, be your first podcast. So
hopefully I did okay.
No, it's just great, amazing. We love your story, and obviously looking forward to the products that you're coming out with for the new car. And people in parentperformance.com on Instagram. Do you guys have YouTube as well?
Our YouTube is just the Parent YouTube channel. It's Parent. Oh, I can't remember what's exactly, but you can't.
We'll link
it. Performance.
Yep.
Awesome.
Cool.
We don't do a lot on there, but we're trying to build that up too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, like those things. Yeah. It's always, we found, like, you know, it's a good resource, right? And like, no matter when, what time, it's just good to look back on.
Yeah.
And always good to have for other people to use as a guide or whatnot.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So thanks so much for joining us. This was cool.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely catch up again, and you know, maybe towards the end of the year, see what's new, what's going on, and how this new car has come throughout the year.
Yeah, so. And maybe by then I'll have a CVT. I can tell you how good or bad it is.
Nice. Awesome.
Cool.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, you're welcome.